Welcome, everybody. It is BNP Weekly. It is 11th of May 2020, and it is Raw 1, Scene 1, Take 1. So let's see how many takes we'll get this time. We had one occasion a few episodes a while back when we were recording, and then after 15 minutes, we were recording. We thought that we were recording, and we were not. So that was actually kind of awkward. Anyway, luckily we didn't have any visitors on this one, and this time we do. But let's start with a quick introduction on what this is all about. So the BNP Weekly, welcome everybody to the BNP Weekly. My name is Sasa Juvonen. I'm a program manager from the OneDrive SharePoint Microsoft engineering side. And with me as a co-host is always Waldek. Who are you?
Well, welcome everybody. My name is Valdek Mastikas. I am head of product at Rancor. And today with us is a guest from, I don't know, it's sunny or cold Chicago. I know it's early. Paul Schaeflein, welcome. Yeah.
Thank you. Yes, it is early and it is cold and sunny. All of the above.
All of the above.
All of the above. Hey, yeah. So thanks for having me.
So what are you, can you do a quick intro, Paul? What do you do for a living? What's your background?
So I am currently technical architect at Addin365, working on our product suite there, which covers everything in Microsoft 365 these days. And I co-host a podcast with Jeremy Thake called the Microsoft 365 Developer Podcast. And
yep. You should subscribe on that one, by the way. Awesome podcast.
Yes, thank you.
I think you all have subscribed already, but the people who are listening or watching.
No, so. You all should subscribe.
Interestingly, I hear them before I, you know, I should subscribe because I don't know that I get my user account. But anyways, yeah. So I've been a longtime fan of you guys. Well, I've said publicly before, Waldek is my favorite developer. So I hope to learn a lot today here listening.
But he is no longer a developer now that he is a manager, whatever, director. So he's not allowed to do
building,
any development.
I'm building things, stuff. Build stuff.
That's what you keep on saying. I don't see anything.
What? What did I do? Now you actually know it's going to be that kind of call.
That's what happens when you get all longtime friends together, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Like somebody's got to take one for a team.
So for the past week, we've been having actually quite a few partners on the show, but I think it's actually a really good discussion point, absolutely, on the let's say, what's the Microsoft 365 opportunity is an interesting discussion point, and also what are the skill sets which you need to learn to be as successful in the Microsoft 365. I think if we start from that perspective, Paul, from your business perspective, I know that you're more a developer and an architect, but obviously you're closely involved with how what happens within the company anyway. What is, from your perspective, the opportunity of Microsoft 365? Why would people want to should offer services in the Microsoft 365 area? Not putting you on a spot or anything. So.
Yeah, well, right. And I'll probably get the marketing slogan wrong, but they expect that out of me these days. But a couple key things. Number one, there are a lot of people using Microsoft 365, obviously, even if it's as simple as email in the cloud, right? And it's certainly the market is there. And what I have found success in all the different career and all different jobs that I've been in, right? These are common scenarios with it being a productivity suite. It really touches all industries, all aspects, and you can make it as challenging or as easy as you want. I thought it was easy until now with work from home, and my wife is having to struggle with work from home and she's not as adept at some of these things as I am, as you can imagine. But it becomes very, from my point of view, it's a very interesting time. There's a great opportunity. You can pick and choose what you want to work on, who you want to work with, the types of problems that you want to solve. And so why would you not pick that, right? If you have the choice, who wants to do the same thing over and over every day? At least for my mindset, that would just bore me to death. So that's the big thing I think about. And it's great. And there's room for all everybody. You know, it's a rising tide, rise all boats, right? So and obviously it's been very fruitful to me over the decades. So I'm grateful for that as well.
That's an interesting dimension. Let's come back on the let's say the opportunities and portfolio also from adding 365 perspective in a second. Just out of curiosity as well, what kind of things people are building? Well, I know, but maybe our audience doesn't know. But before we go there, can we go really back in time and talk about your background as well? You've been around for quite a long time. So how did you end up doing Microsoft 365 dev stuff?
So I was writing RPG on the AS400
And that's not a joke.
What are you talking about?
That's not a joke. Go to Wikipedia. The page is probably still there. And I got, because I was one of the IT guys, they needed someone to do a web page. And so I did a web page. And then there was this new portal thing that came out called the SQL Server Digital Dashboard. And I fell in love with that. XML, XSLT. It was awesome.
And that was in 84?
Oh, God. It was before Y2K, yes.
Well, not 84, probably, yeah, but still.
Yes. But, yeah, and so, but then, you know, that portal opportunity, you know, the potential then of doing what we called portals back in the day just intrigued me in aggregating various backend systems for you. And so I've been focusing on ever since, it seems like, right? I get information in front of people when they need it, where they need it. So long story short, that led into SharePoint, which led into connecting up with some people. The folks at MindSharp hired me or kicked around the tires there. And I was independent for a long, long time and have various consulting gigs over the years. And now I'm back into writing code again, which is great. So, but yeah, that's my history. It was a whole time of, you know, trying to get information in front of users when they need it, where they need it, so that they can get their job done. Yeah. And that's Teams, which is interesting for me, it seems.
Yeah, but that objective hasn't changed, right? So we're still talking about the if you think about the evolution of computers and all of this situation with COVID-19, it's all about still communications and getting the relevant information on the front of the people when they open up their computer, right?
Yeah, let the computer do the mundane work and help the users.
Or not. Right, because I mean, they might be on the phone, they might be on Teams.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly. Not in the computer.
In a past, you would get email or a colleague at your desk, right? And now you have plethora of different channels, and I think it's even more tricky to find the right way to communicate through all of them, basically. Yep.
But still, the objective is still the same, right? It doesn't matter if it's is it an iPad or is it one of these or whatever it is.
You
basically
want
to make it as you want to make it as easily accessible, and also it's the classic story of is it a digital dashboard? Is it a whatever the Outlook welcome start page, which still exists, which is weird? Is it a SharePoint portal? Is it Teams and personal application? It's all about surfacing the relevant information and the actions as easy as possible for the people. And we've seen quite a few different, let's say, transitions. And I think nowadays we're obviously considering the Microsoft Teams as the hub layer where people are then accessing the information and then we surface stuff on there. But it's interesting, the evolution of these things. It's still, regardless, always the same thing, that as easily possible to access and work on the relevant data, which doesn't seem to change. The amount of data is moving, though. But.
Yeah. So, Paul, at In365, you guys build things that encompass all M365, right? So it's not just web parts, but it's like everything across the whole stack, right?
The productivity stack, right? So the tagline is helping users use the parts of Office 365 that are relevant to their job. And so in some cases, that may be an Outlook add-in. In some cases, that may be web parts. Although, to be honest, we've taken all of our custom web parts out, and we tell people to use the out-of-the-box stuff, and we just provide a little layer on top of that. And then there's a whole suite of products, you know, inside of Teams with a bot and knowledge management capabilities and stuff that we do to help folks. Again, you're using – your job is not to use Office 365. Your job is to do something else that makes money. And so let us help you use Office 365 to do your job instead of fighting with the tool and making the job. The job is my tool, not yours, right?
It's a very non-devy way to put it, to be honest, right?
Sure.
like typically being dev, you would say like, I'm going to build things. I'm going to build cool things. I'm going to build cool things in Teams, cool things in SharePoint. And you're like, no. Like, we are there to help users do their job. And their job is not to use Office. Their job is to do their job. And Office is just means to an end, right?
Yeah. So we build cool things that we run and surface them where you need them to go. And part of that is the work that Vesta's team is doing. And part of that is the work the Teams team is doing and so on. So we have this cool stuff running in the background. And so we can put it in an Outlook add-in. We can put it in a Teams tab. We can put it in a bot. We can put it on a SharePoint page, whatever the case may be. Again, what does the organization need? We're happy to bring that to you, to the fore for you.
Yeah.
So from different things available on the stack, like how do you go about choosing like what's the best thing for the customer to use for their need? How do you pick the right channel?
Paul doesn't pick it at all. Paul knows what he's told. But the gist of that is right. There's two types of approaches to this, right? And some of this is Adam 365. Some of this is the decades I've been doing this, right? Occasionally, you'll run into a customer who has a defined idea of what they want to do. We are doing this. We're doing this. And so our goal then is to help them do that thing. There are some who don't know. And in some cases like that, maybe I'm the last person to get involved to sit down with a customer and work way the best way to do their day job and how to get through things, right? Because with the developer mindset, oh, it's easy. You do X, Y, Z, you know, these 14 steps right. And you're done. And I've lost them on step two. Yeah. So they... that it becomes a team effort, right? And so you need to sit with folks who can maybe aren't as technical. And we have folks on staff who they look at me and I talk to them and right over their head, Susie's key. She's like, don't give me the mumbo jumbo. Just tell me what we need to do. And so that, again, we find the success there helping them. What is it you're trying to accomplish? And, oh, there's this thing in our toolbox we can do. Or is this thing that Microsoft, again, SharePoint's a great example. Back a couple of years ago, there were two dozen web parts that we were supporting. And now, like, well, why? You know, everything out of the SharePoint stuff out of the box gets you 90% of the way there. Do you really need this fancy image web part? Just make do with one that's already there. So find the right tool for the job and use it. And then we'll help you with these other areas. So,
And then obviously behind the scenes, they're using also Azure as the backend of hosting things, which is quite natural, actually, for the Microsoft 365 side. Now, on that topic, and if you think about it, you said that you're a developer, and then, well, I know that you're a developer by heart, definitely.
I deployed production code last week.
There we go. They don't allow me to do that, which is a good thing, by the way. But if you think about, let's say, the developer skills and developer, let's say, tool panel, what would be the top five things in your mind which a developer should be looking into right now? I can guess quite a few of them, but...
M365?
No, that's not a technology. So obviously, Microsoft Graph is the number one way of accessing all of the data in Microsoft 365 or under the hub on the Microsoft network in general. What else would be the interesting things?
Yeah, so it's a very complicated question, and my consulting brain is saying it depends. Obviously we're talking about the Microsoft 365 stack, and so I tell developers, you know, you can go find the coolest little wacky obscure language that does exactly what you need, and that's great. But the if you want to integrate with the service like what we do, what's the best way to put something in SharePoint and Teams? Well, I can write it twice in these funky languages, or I can use SPFX, right? And so the initial answer always becomes you use Microsoft Graph where you can, where you can't, you try to find the service APIs, and you use the tools that are given to you, and can attest, right? Sometimes we're very vocal saying we need you to do this because that unblocks us. And so why should I have to do that? Microsoft should do that for us, right? And sometimes they do and sometimes they don't, and life goes on. But to be practical, you have to use what you're given if you want to succeed. Now, the inverse of that, so if we think back to more than a couple of years ago in my training background, we'd sit down with developers and say, well, if you have a whole bunch of developers who are really good at technology X, why in the world would you throw that away and force them to learn technology Z? So there's that fine line between what your staff can do and what the service can do, and you need to bridge that gap. And so in my scenario, I'm a C# .NET Visual Studio type of guy. That's where I'm very productive, right? And so that's what I default to until I get stuck, or in the case of last week, I need to build a full page SharePoint web page part thing. It doesn't make sense to be using C# in that regard. So no, I had to use that thing that we call JavaScript, but
what? No, did you say the K word?
Yeah. Yeah, the J word, exactly. We're tight
because that's not tight. Not swear.
So to answer your question is, I think that you find that balance between what your staff or what your skill set is to make you productive versus what is going to help you get to market faster or get in front of your users faster based on what the service provides for you.
Yep. Absolutely. And that's actually a good point, what you're saying, that the team, knowledge in the team has a massive impact on the project. And that's one of the key points why it depends. If a team doesn't have any knowledge on React and JavaScript development, maybe the solution will look slightly different because otherwise the costs will be enormous or whatever it is. So, but coming back on the technology things, what would be your recommendation on the areas of now focusing from a developer perspective? What would be the things that people, if people are coming, because we can still see a lot of people, which is good, and that's by design, because a lot of people actually watching are getting started and trainings and getting started tutorials and videos and all of that, which it is a massive world, so it takes a while for people to adapt. What would be the things where people should be now looking into from your perspective? And well, if there's no right or wrong answers in here.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. So if someone new coming into the thing, I see a lot of dearth of people talk either writing or understanding how to provide data. So you should understand how to write an API. We can learn a lot about how to call Microsoft Graph or SharePoint or Exchange or whatever those services are that Microsoft provided APIs. But at some point, you're going to have data that you need to do something with, and how are you going to store it? Where are you going to put it? And so I can still remember drawing database diagrams by hand in college. And you know what? That skill, it's been many, 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 many years. But you still need to do that. You still need to store data. Sure. Now, maybe it's Cosmos instead of SQL Server or DocumentDB instead of SQL Server, but you still need to do that. So you really should be understanding how am I going to store data to get it efficiently, and how am I going to get that data to my front end. That front end may be a team. It might be whatever. It may not even be in the suite. It might be your own standalone web page. Or perhaps there's a standalone web page already you want to surface somewhere else, but I don't want the UI. I just want the data. How do I get that data? So I, for a long, long time, I've been advocating, folks, you really should understand how to write an API and how to secure that. And whether you write that in C# like I do, or you do something in Node or any other server-side language that can expose data, it doesn't matter. At that point, it doesn't matter. That's where I go back to what I said about your team. What is your team good at writing? If they're good at writing in Node, use Node. You can surface an API in Node, but have that conversation about what data am I exposing, what shape does it look like, how do I make sure it's secure and being called by the right people. And then after you have that foundation, then you can go through, well, I can go learn how to do SPFX, or I can go learn how to do whatever tomorrow's fancy JavaScripty thing is and get that data in front of users.
I can sense some negativity against JavaScript in this discussion.
I like the joke. It's old dog, new tricks. That's all it is, really. It's an old dog has to learn new tricks, right? And so the biggest frustration, to be honest, though, is the keyboard shortcuts that are ingrained in my the muscle memory from Visual Studio don't necessarily apply to VS Code, and I keep finding new ones that aren't there, and that's the frustration, right? But I joke, right? And it's really just the persona of being an old guy. But like I said, I've spent 2 weeks writing React SPFX components, and so I dug into how are people writing React code these days, right? What's the state of the state, if you will? And that got me into the React hooks and started kicking the tires on that and seeing patterns, seeing opportunities, and it led to a blog post and helping Hugo do some stuff on the web parts and the PNP samples, and I have some idea for new packages. That's what we should probably talk about that. But my point is that, right? So as much as I joke about that, like that, and Victor and I have a long running thing. He keeps doing the bot and Node, and I keep doing the bot and C#. But who's right and who's wrong? It's really just a shtick to make us both feel better at the end of the day. But to your point about what the technology, if you're going to be doing something in Microsoft 365 these days, you have to understand React. You have to understand when you run the generator, you get a thing. How does that thing work? You have to know how it works instead of just copy pasting from the internet and going on. So you have to learn React. You have to learn your developer tool, whether it's code or via the full VS, whatever the case may be. You should be good at that. You should be good at your editor to be productive. And then the tool chain is the third thing.
No.
I'm sorry. What was that? All that?
Vim.
Oh God!
I never understood how to close that.
I still cannot exit it.
Uh, So the technology that you need to learn, really, certainly React, you need to understand the tool chain of what you're running in, the editor that you're using, and you need to know how to use Google or Bing to find, because there is so much information out there. If you're struggling for more than 10 minutes, you're doing it wrong. You've got to find a way to search for the thing you're looking for and find current, up-to-date information. Or people, I mean, I lurk a lot on the Twitters just to see who's talking about what, so that I know whose blog to go find when I have, when I'm stuck. And really, that's just the way it works, right? And if you're more outgoing, you can actually reach out to people. I'm happy to answer questions that people ask me, and I know you two are as well. It's just,
But I guess, like, this is a, you mentioned there, important aspect of the how things are up to date. I mean, just today, I had a look, like, I need to build something in Teams that I haven't done. So I go to the docs. There's a link to a repo that is 2 years old, and that's built on Node. Well, 2 years back, Node is already gone. That thing doesn't, like, and that's current docs that points, like, and then you're stuck. And, like, I want to just pressed, like,
let's not use the same terms which we used in a chat related on this discussion.
Yeah, but I mean, like it only proves the point, like, how quickly nowadays things go out of date and how much effort there is to keep things up to date and running, because there are so many things in the chain, right? There is different version of Node, TypeScript, React, Bot Framework, Teams Manifest. Like, there's a whole set of things, and they're all being built by themselves, right? So, like, they're owned by different teams, they have different life cycles, and so forth, and so on. And then there's somebody, let's say, responsible for the first dev experience, right? Like, I am a new dev. I want to build a bot. Where do I start? And then your first experience is, pull code, F5 doesn't work. That's not a good thing, right? So.
that's just the way things work these days, right? If you want to, if you want to interact with a service, you got to follow what they're doing. It's totally... It is a different mindset. It is a completely different mindset, and people coming new to the ecosystem from outside may struggle with this. But if you can find a way to just think through, well, I don't own the story end to end, so therefore I have to do what I'm told instead of telling people what they should do. And if that works for you, great. If you can find a way to make that happen and channel your creativity in other areas that, like we do at Admin365, we have these great ideas, and perhaps SharePoint's not there yet or Teams isn't there yet. That's fine. We'll do it ourselves and find a way to interface and iterate with the team and talk to people and come up with a good idea. So, but yeah, you're right. That's fortunately in some of those areas, I don't know enough to know that I'm really way behind.
But then at the same time,
Like back in the days, it wasn't really that bad. Like, you would get this a whole folder of MSDN CDs, and they would just work, right? And you had everything on them.
But again, the innovation speed was so much slower because the life cycle of every single major version was like here 3 years. And it's one of those things, as a person who's responsible on some of the let's say getting started materials for Microsoft 365 and the onboarding messaging and everything else. One of the key challenges what we keep on having is exactly what Waldo was referring to, which is keeping everything up to date. Because the more documentation and guidance and samples you have, you might think it's a positive thing. Well, for a while, but after a while, it isn't, when you need to start going and updating all of the documentation, samples, and guidance. And then you end up having this massive resource, let's say, requirement, which you can't meet. And that basically means that it's not about providing more guidance, it's about providing more relevant guidance and maybe reducing the overall set of things rather than expanding, because...
And I think that another thing that adds complexity to it is the fact that, like, in the past, if you wanted to do things on the Microsoft stack, you would do them what? You would do on Windows with VS. And that was the only option you had. Like, there wasn't really, like, bring your own whatever you wanted to do. Nowadays, you can build things for M365 on Mac, Linux, and Windows. You can use Node, I don't know, 8, 10, 12, 13. You can use NPM this, yo that, gob this. And all of these different things, like, it's basically like a multi-dimensional matrix of things you have to take into account when you create a new project, right? Because it might work on Windows, it might break on Linux. And there's like, oh yeah, but for this, you need to have version back. and it becomes like really quickly a hell to maintain, right?
Yeah. And that gets back to what I try to tell new developers. You have to learn what's the goal, right? All these things, the sample is trying to do X and it's interfacing a certain way. Okay. So maybe it's Node version 2 and it doesn't work anymore, but at some point it's trying to do something and you have to distill down to its core what it's trying to do. And maybe if you get two or three different samples, you can piece them together. And it gets very frustrating. Yep. I totally get that, but that's not working.
Yeah. Plus the fact that some of the samples are quite often too complex, and then they are complex for the core presentation perspective. They're complex to make them pretty, which was irrelevant for the thing what they're trying to demonstrate.
But it's also like the balancing act, right? Because you want to make them real life, but you also want to make them accessible to new devs, right? And how do you marry these two?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Now, let's actually jump on the articles for a while and let's discuss some of the React hooks in there as well as we go along with a
real life things.
Real life things, yes. Not just theoretical. Yeah, never mind. But let's actually move on here. And let's start with a few news from Microsoft 365 developer blog. Vincent Biret, who used to be an MVP and nowadays works in the identity side of the not identity necessarily, but Microsoft Graph side of the house from Canada, had a blog post from 5th of May related on updates on the change notification SDKs, new samples related on webhooks and notifications as well. So really cool. Nice to see that the graph is getting more and more and more love. Behind the scenes, there's actually multiple teams and organizations who are actually pushing APIs to the Microsoft Graph. And then Jeremy Thake's team is basically coordinating things, what the individual organization is doing. And he's doing an awesome job on that one. Jeremy being Paul's, co-host?
And in fact, we had Vincent on as a guest a few episodes back to talk about this topic as well. So if you if you need some more, podcast time talking about change tracking and notifications, Vincent came on and gave us some details on that as well.
Yeah, he's super knowledgeable and super excited, super passionate about those things. It's great to have him actually working in Microsoft as well on this side. So really cool. Now, the last lap around Microsoft Graph Toolkit, day 7, came out last week as well, from Monday, 4th of that one. And this was basically the last of the series of 7 blog posts, which are mainly for the MVPs and a few MSFTs behind the scenes. Nicola obviously being the creator of the toolkit and the actual developer, and then Simon, Hugo, Cameron, Fabio wrote some articles here as well. What's your take on the Graph Toolkit, Paul?
So I like what I see, but when I first tried to use it, there was like 18 steps to make it work with React that I didn't understand, so I stopped reading. And I don't mean that as a criticism of the toolkit in any way, shape, or form. It's just that, again, that's back to learning. I didn't get it. Yeah. I have to take time to see what they're doing and how to make it work and it'll look good. But yeah, I love anything that makes users' life easier. I'm on board 100%.
So. Exactly. And if the onboarding takes too long, it's like, no, I don't have time for this stuff. So, and then you.
Yeah.
Right. So. Good. This one came out on the SharePoint blog site, which is announcing general availability of sensitivity labels with protection of SharePoint and OneDrive. And this is going to be extended for other areas as well, which is pretty cool. But it is around the sensitivity labels, and they were true Office and Office client and true all of the things as well. Sesha, who's the, I don't know if actually says the right title for him. No, it doesn't. I think he's a principal program manager leading the team responsible of this capability. We'll be actually demonstrating this live on Tuesday 12th on the SharePoint monthly community call. So that's pretty cool as well. Now, this one is from actually probably Waldeck. You wrote this one this morning.
Exactly.
You wrote that. It was Gary who wrote it.
Correct.
Now, see? I'm stalking you.
You keep track. Yes, you keep
track. But using your own Azure ID identity with Office 365 CLI, there's an interesting discussions related on CLI future and Azure integration. What was that?
The other day we were contacted by the PM on the Azure Cloud Shell team, who asked us if we would be interested. Of course, we are to have O365 CLI published by default or available by default in the Azure Cloud Shell. So in Azure, the portal, you can open a basically in-browser terminal in which you have PowerShell or Bash, I believe. And in there, you have already available the Azure CLI and Azure PowerShell commandlets. And that team looks now into expanding more into the M365 area. And we are a candidate to get included in their stack.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. That's awesome.
It's really awesome.
Hey, so you could make my life easier if you would go talk to the people who build the Microsoft-provided agents in Azure DevOps and have it preloaded on there so that it could save me, you know, a download or seven every day.
One step at a time, I believe.
Isn't that the same console, actually? So if
I don't think it is. I don't think it is. So the Azure Cloud Shell, that works on Docker containers. So I'm not sure if it's the same tech stack as the agents in the DevOps. But maybe, like, so we already have GitHub Actions, Paul. So if you would be willing to learn a new trick.
Every day
there's something new, right?
But I have to say, from my perspective, the best part about the CLI is that I can use environment variables to set credentials, as they talk about here, and then do we're deploying stuff to multiple tenants as part of the dev pipeline, because as we said, I have non-technical folks working with me, and they don't know how to. They don't care to go learn how to deploy an app necessarily. So if you're not using the CLI in your own dev pipeline, you're missing a boat here. So this has been great stuff.
And you're even a Windows user, unless I'm completely wrong, Paul. So because, hey, you haven't learned a new trick of learning.
until that trick knocks me over, I stay away from
and
it.
And that is the cool thing with CLI, right? You can use it in command, in PowerShell, in Bash, with the WSL, the Windows subsystem Linux, right? So it works everywhere. And there's also another thing that we have launched recently, and that is with Paul's help, support to authenticate with the managed identity, right? So if you run a Azure function, or you have VM in Azure, or even on the local box, if you have the Azure CLI installed and you authenticate with that, you can use Office 365 and CLI without having to authenticate by itself. So no credentials. And I think, like, if I'm not mistaken, like, that isn't available yet in the build agents managed.
Well, sort of, kind of. If you're doing a build agent, your best bet right now is to put your credentials in the Key Vault and have the Azure DevOps use their Azure connection to various things and pull information out of the Key Vault and put it in environment.
Yeah.
And even in Gary's blog post here, it talks about using the environment to set some values. In his example, it's a client ID and a tenant ID, secret. But it could easily, the environment variables could be username and password as well. And so, So as long as you're like, to Waldex and the team's credit, right, they're doing the way things CLIs do, the environment. And in this case, the Azure DevOps environment is different than my function runtime environment, which is different than my laptop environment. And it all just works because I set the environment as necessary and things just work.
Makes perfect sense. Now, the next one is a few weeks back, which is completely fine. We missed it on that time. But Paul, what would you want to talk about this one? This is from your blog.
Yeah, so this, again, goes back to what we were talking about before, where I needed to learn some new stuff and how was React being done. And so I saw an opportunity. Well, so I was joking with Hugo, right? I had written an adaptive card web part at a dev kitchen, I don't know, 3 years ago or something like that. And of course, life being life, I never got around to doing much with it. But he did one, and I had, there was a feature that I had written that he didn't have. Hugo, this is in the PNP samples. And so it was one of those things where I'd have to spend a lot of time building the whole part, the whole web part, because it was already there. I was just extending it. So that freed up some time of mine to say, well, how is the React world doing things? And so React hooks is the current trend. And I found some benefits of doing that. And so I took the web part that Hugo built and made a copy of it and rewrote it as using hooks. And then this blog post goes through and saying, if you look at that original web part, here's the things that I wrote and why I did them and how they can be used. And so at the end of the day, you can see things work a little bit. It works, whether it's better or worse is subjective, and I'm not going to argue. But the goal here, of course, is here's one using React classes, here's one using React functions with hooks. And if you see two things doing this, two approaches to the same problem, to me that helps, you know, understand. I can triangulate what's going on here. And so that's the goal of this blog post, was to say, hey, there's another way to do it, and how you one approach. And I'll ask your audience, if I'm doing this wrong, it's all new to me, you won't offend me by saying, Paul, you're an idiot. You should have done this.
No. Like, I think it's as part of the experience, more you see, you realize that everything is subjective and there is no right or wrong. There's multiple ways of achieving exactly the same end result. So it's one of those things. There's never a one solution for a technical challenge or a logical challenge. Let's put it this way. So.
Well, but and also the thing, right, that at the end of the day, the customer don't care. Like, they don't really care whether you build it with hooks or functions or classes. They don't care. They want to have solution to their needs.
Yep.
And whether you implement it left or right, like,
it's a minimal set of investment. So,
well, yes, but also it's something that as Paul said, it has to match the skills your team has, because at the end of the day, you need to maintain it, right? And if you like force yourself to use something that you don't know, you will implement it wrong because you don't know the tech, you don't know the stack, you don't know the caveats and different things. It will hurt you in the end, right?
So if that's going to cost you more, or whoever is paying for it, then,
without any value additionally to customer.
Yes.
So why bother?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's an interesting multidimensional question as well. It's a good thinking point for those who are building open source tooling and JavaScript libraries and whatever and samples, because the key question is, why would anybody bother? Why would they be interested on your stuff as well? It's not just about the customer's perspective, but it's an interesting discussion point. Absolutely. Sorry, slightly sidetracked. Now, SPF extension to generate document QR code using command sets. Nice example from Sitart, who's been actually sharing a lot of actually cool samples on the SPFX. And this is really using, I think it uses one of the third-party components for generating the QR code. I can't remember which one, but it's a nice example of creating a QR code for an item, whatever reason that would be. So some people really like QR codes. Some people don't even care or know what they are. So it took me actually a long time to understand that I can point my camera to the QR code and my camera, and then it realizes something. It's like, oh, that's how it works. Well, that's pretty cool. Anyway, so that was a hint for those who are not aware of what it actually means. Now,
that's what it's for.
Exactly.
Today, I learned.
Every single day. So Yannick had a really nice kind of a blog post explaining shipping a Microsoft 365 solution as a single PMP package. And this is really around the fact that taking advantage of the PMP tenant templates, because in his scenario, he has a Site Design Studio V2, which is actually a multi-web part extension solution built on a SharePoint site. And then using the PMP tenant tool, you can basically extract that and then apply that as a solution to another tenant, which creates the site collection behind the scenes as well. And that basically walks through the whole process. And that's actually pretty cool. Some historical things and additional context, and then obviously how to configure and what kind of things you can actually do. So really cool setup from Yannick.
Cool.
How to create an index for SharePoint spaces using the content query web part. And this is basically just a demonstration on using the updated content React content query web part. There's an online version now, which is using 1.10, which actually works as a Microsoft Teams tab as well, which is pretty cool, which you can then configure, you can modify the templating and all of that. So really, really cool web part.
Nice.
And this is really combining that with the spaces experience and walking through how can you do a list of things and a list of items which you have on the spaces, and then you can do something like this and start then the spaces experience in the SharePoint zone. So the SharePoint spaces is now in public preview. It's one of those things where people can already test it out and provide us feedback on what you think about it. So, and we're seeing a nice amount of interests on the people on this experience. So. Good. That was the web part. A simple way to deploy any asset with your SPFX solution. Basically, a story related on how do we package stuff and adding assets in the SPFX solution when you're deploying stuff. what are those things which we're actually getting involved, and then using an extension to actually get stuff or configurations to get stuff included. So really cool stuff as well. Good note from Michelle Mendes. See, my pronunciation is
yes, of course. It's only a matter of time.
It took 1.5 years.
Practice.
Never give up. You'll get it. File created or modified with SharePoint, Program Tricker from Joel Rodriguez. He's been talking a lot about these things and always uses the PMP weekly hashtag, so we know that and what's coming out. So basically, a story related on what is broken, what's working, and what else we need to look into on fixing these things from our side as well. Now, Charpas Horst from Valo Intranet, identifying if a team personal app runs from a Teams web or Teams desktop client. And that's actually a pretty cool thing because, well, you might want to know, is it actually running in a browser or is it running in a desktop, even though technically it shouldn't have any.
Why would you care, right?
Yeah. Technically, it shouldn't have any difference, but really, there's multiple ways of actually doing that, and the user agent is one way of actually recognizing that. So good note from Charpas.
You know, I want to interject here and say if you need to know why, and you turn out there may be a legitimate reason, and you're finding a problem, this is the kind of thing that should go, in my opinion, should go get in front of Microsoft and say, I care that whether I'm in a web client or a desktop client because of XYZ. Yeah. And maybe that's something the team can fix or to get rid of.
It's right? So by default. Yeah, exactly.
More easily rather than using a complex way of recognizing that. Yeah.
And I guess extension of that is also to know like whether the web parts runs in SharePoint, in Teams, personal app or a tab, or even now as an extension, right? Because that's available too, right? Yep. So knowing that, because you might want to implement different behavior depending like how the web part is shown.
Well, but that's, see, my point is Microsoft has given to me a solution that will run in SharePoint, it'll run in Teams, and Teams has multiple platforms. And if I have to do funky things to determine which one, something's broken. Right? Or maybe. So my initial gut would be, well, why do I, if I have to do this because of something that's not working amongst these three environments, I should tell someone at Microsoft because maybe it's supposed to, or maybe it's a scenario they haven't thought of and it's worth hitting that discussion. And so I just like to say, hey, when you're doing these if cases around my environment, should you be? And if you are doing it because something's broken, let's get it fixed. And it's much better these days to get things fixed.
And that's good feedback, absolutely. All of this stuff is something what we want to collect and we want to address those gaps. So really good point. Shao Mendes had another one at the SPFX web part to a full white column. So just covering how you can actually add those things. The secret being support full white. So you can actually get your web part available in the full path column. So you can actually do nicely layouting things. So the layouting things in SharePoint, which you can then surface in Teams as an example, as a portal, it's getting more and more flexible all the time, which is pretty cool. From Steve Hart, another one, how to call an external API from SPFX web part. And even though all of this stuff is also documented in the documentation, it's good to have an alternative perspective and demos and recaps on all of this stuff. So this talks about calling a COVID-19 endpoint and then providing information. So calling an external API, which isn't secure. So there's a different pattern for that one as well. Two more. So this one is from Craig from SharePoint Maven. Three reasons to need to understand SharePoint user profiles. A lot of SharePoint stuff this time. Now, there's a lot of reasons why you should understand SharePoint profile. But to be honest, in SharePoint Online, hopefully, we can see signs where we're heading already. Because there was a blog, there was a session, as an example, in Ignite 2019, where we talked about the custom properties in the graph user object. So we're heading more and more gradually away from the fact that it's a SharePoint user profile rather than M365 user profile.
And it makes perfect sense because you need it everywhere. You need it in your Outlook. You need it in your Teams. You need it even in Flow or in Power Apps, like everywhere. And it just doesn't make sense for it to live in the endpoints as opposed to in a central place when it's always in sync and it always shows the same stuff to everybody.
Yep, absolutely.
And there are some profile endpoints on the graph these days. I'm not sure if it's in V1 or still in beta, but yep. it's moving to the graph in general.
That was the one which was a session actually in Ignite 2019, which is, by the way, a recording is available on that one. So, but it's one of those things where Ignite has so many sessions that people can't keep up with all of the new cool announcements and demos in them. The last one from Joanna Klein, retention in SharePoint Online, where, what, and how. And this was the summary, which is basically the how, and then how to make that stuff happen. My thoughts on third-party products, what are the things, what's happening, and around the retention description. But really cool stuff, and a nice summary on things. And this, obviously, all of this stuff evolves over time now that the labels are out and all of that. That changes the things as well. And I'm pretty sure that Joanna is going to update those as needed. Good. Let me actually stop sharing. And then we have a few minutes for the close-up because it took again quite a few times for the article. So what's happening this week? Well, what are you working on this week?
Paul.
I don't know yet because it's Monday and I haven't talked to the boss.
So easy.
Yeah. But it's more day life at developer, write some code, push out, check logs, update the analytics and good stuff.
Yeah.
Nice.
What about you, Waldeck? Anything special?
I'm setting first steps in developing things for Teams. So hence my comments on Teams, like fiddling with bots and messaging extensions and like, how do you start around that? And even though it's the same stack, I know it's Node and NPM. I was like, it's not just an F5, right? Like it's not just an NPM start. Like there are quite a few things, like you have to have registered things, IDs, passwords, ports, things to mimic or debug things locally. So there are quite a few moving parts. And it's like, if you try to go to the docs and skim just, okay, where is the part that I need? Like, it doesn't work that way. You really need to take your time to read through it and to get it.
Yeah, for teams especially, I recommend, Greg, go to the table of contents and read through everything. Spend an hour just reading all the docs first, because that'll help you when you get into the code.
Yeah.
Cool.
And then, while like in your case, you're one of the persons who are creating the updated guidance as well. So so it's kind of one of those things that you will go through the pain so that the other people don't have to
right. Yeah. So I will. So, I will be taking notes.
Make a hit for the other people. So, yeah, exactly. Which is good. Good. From my side, we're pushing heavily the SharePoint Framework Store model, still actively working on that one. You might think that this thing is just switch here enabled in the app source, but they're not. It's slightly more complicated, the validations and everything else behind the scenes and making all of that work. So but working actively on that one. And then quite a few conferences coming up and we need to finalize some plans, but that's a separate discussion. So we're also running out of...
Anything exciting for build? If you can just share a little, like, or lift a little bit of a skirt, no?
Yes. I've seen already a few cool demos which have been recorded for the build because it's a virtual conference. A lot of the stuff has been already done, and there's deadlines which are actually passed already for a lot of the videos.
So in other words, you would say it is worth attending for a SharePoint person.
For the relevant sessions, absolutely, and in general, yes, absolutely. There's been built which is relevant for anything in Microsoft 365. Sure, there's
free
team sessions.
And it's free, right?
It's free, yeah. Like SharePoint Designer, by the way.
But SharePoint Designer won't work anymore, so
that's true as well.
It works if
let's
you're
not talk about that one. I'll just.
Bombshell. Good night.
But I think that's it for this week. That's a good moment to stop. So thank you, Paul, for dropping by. Good discussion and good to recap your perspectives and guidance for the slightly newer people who are joining on the development platform as well.
Thanks for me. Always a pleasure to catch up.
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely. So we'll be back with a new PMP Weekly within a week. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.